give us advice on that, as one person of the council, would be much appreciated. Carla?
The next three are Dan Bourbonnais, Jane Malarkey, and Brad Yazzolino.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the City Council. Glad you're here.
They'll be followed by Dave Johnson, Floyd Jones, and Stephanie Stewart.
Go ahead. Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Dan Bourbonnais. I'm General Manager of Alsco American Linen. As an industrial laundry employing 220 people, doing business in the city of Portland for over 50 years. As you might know, water is a vital resource in the laundry industry, and we are one of the larger users in the city. I am dismayed and disappointed that the Water Bureau is proposing an 18% increase in water costs this year and similar increases for the next 4 years to over doubling the water costs in 5 years. Those kinds of increases to business that use water as a major resource are going to put a severe strain on the viability of conducting business in the city, especially at this economic time. These increases are in addition to already heavy burden that the big pipe has placed upon us. The cost the City of Portland residents and businesses have had to bear to solve the combined sewer overflow problem have been onerous and we are now looking down the barrel of another extremely expensive system. Our protected water supply is one of the purest in the world, and an additional layer of protection to solve a problem that does not exist. I strongly urge the City Council to pursue congressional intervention in the cryptosporidium ruling or a variance to the ruling from the EPA. Unfortunately, I was recently made aware of this proposal before you, and I, like other businesses, have not had time to completely understand the scope of this proposal and the long-term effect on our business. I further urge you not to approve this report until the business community has time to further study its impact. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead.
My name is Jane Malarkey, and I'm a native Portlander. I've lived here all my life, which is something I think is becoming increasingly rare. I can remember my father when I was a child talking about how lucky we were to have this pristine water source of drinking water in Portland. I understand that EPA rules are telling us that we must attach a nearly $400 million filtration system to our pristine water in the Bull Run to filter out contaminants, but there is no evidence that infectious contaminants exist in the Bull Run area. That's a lot of money spent unnecessarily, in my opinion. We all know the damage that was done by years of logging and road building in the Bull Run area, and I am afraid that if we have to build a filtration system, that it will result in the resumption of logging, road building, and the introduction of the very contaminants that we have never seen in the water in Bull Run. Does this make sense? I don't think so. What I'm respectfully asking that you do today is to not spend any city money on construction of the LT2 only projects. I am requesting that you ask for an extension in compliance deadlines from the DCEPA and the Obama administration. I am also asked that you request that the Oregon congressional delegation support the city in its request for such an extension. And I'm asking that you implement and maintain an aggressive effort to secure legislative relief and to not give up. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yes, my name is Brad Yazzolino. I want to commend Commissioner Leonard and the Water Bureau and David Schaff for all they've been doing. I think we have some great players involved in this, and that's why I think successful congressional exclusion is a possibility. I'm a Portland native artist and filmmaker. I've been following the subject at hand since 1990. Let's take the long view. Since 1895, Portland has used Bull Run water, a very unique source, a source that is clean beyond the understanding of the federal district court judge who unjustly ruled against Portland. Our whole system is like a very green gift from the clever engineers of a past and simpler age. All we need to do is maintain it. Let's work with our congressional delegation to preserve and embrace our open reservoirs not as outdated, but as from some harmoniously green future, because that is exactly what they are like. Portland is way out in front of almost every other city as far as being a truly green and having a truly green and sustainable water system. That is, unless we do as the flawed and schizophrenic EPA wants us to and destroy what we have for absolutely no measurable health benefit. I'm going to skip over what I say about the how logging was started in the 1950s and how a man named Joseph Miller Jr. Eventually cried out about that and was heard in the halls of Congress. And with the help of Senator Ron Wyden and others, the logging was stopped. We can get a congressional exclusion if this time if we try, because our green and environmentally sound water system actually merits one. And it's fairly clear that the water industry enacted the LT2 law with the help of an EPA that has been especially anti-environmentalist in the last few years. Many states have sued the EPA and because it used bad science, and that's enough of that. But Portland... today's Oregonian reports how Oregon is building one of the largest green buildings on Earth. And real changes are coming fast, and one is our economic crisis. When the people find everything harder to pay for, and when they get the idea that they now have to pay for a $400 million bridge to nowhere just to jump through a water industry hoop, they may lose a little bit more faith in those who govern. We have a little piece of Earth that we can try to control. Destroying a legacy that is greener and more sustainable than most engineers would design today would be tragic. That's what the EPA is asking us to do, and the Water Bureau is willing to proceed on that plan a bit too fast, very little more. Portland should embrace our position as the possessor of a fabulous asset, a water system in real harmony with the environment, one that needs a relatively small amount of chemical assistant to be 100% proven safe. If we destroy it, we lock into a constant cycle of build, change, demolish, rebuild, and treat with the newest chemicals. We become the captive consumers of the shifting water industry trends over decades, over centuries. We should proudly say, as we maintain our system, we drink the rain and it works fine for us.
Thank you very much.
The next three are Dave Johnson, Floyd Jones, and Stephanie Stewart. And they'll be followed by Jeff Boley and Catherine Thomason.
Welcome to the City Council. Dave, I think you're up first.
Hi, my name is Dave Johnson. I'm the West Side representative for the Portland Utility Review Board. I think there's only one bad outcome in this, and that's for the city of Portland to be out of compliance with the EPA rules. And I think it's critical that your decisions avoid that outcome. I believe the proposed approach is a good balance of seeking relief, both through variance and federal legislation, while planning for compliance to avoid further EPA sanctions. I'm new to the PURB, but in my first 9 months, I've been impressed with the Bureau management and the chief engineer, and I have confidence in their efforts to implement this three-prong approach to give Portland the most options to move forward. So I recommend that you accept the report. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Floyd, you're next.
I agree with the current Water Bureau slogan, from forest to faucet. The Portland Water Bureau delivers the best drinking water in the world. And I don't want to see a new slogan, from filtration plant, aluminum, acrylamide, iron salts, and coagulant sludge to buried tanks. We were once the best. Now we're just like the rest. And I'm going to speak to the specific proposals, the specific compliance proposals. Indeed, we support a full and vigorous city effort to secure congressional relief, a legislative waiver from the onerous and unsupported requirements of the LT2. We do not believe that a filtration plant is a better option than a UV plant or an ozone plant. One of the benefits the Water Bureau suggested is that we'd be able to draw down Bull Run further if we built a filtration plant instead of UV. But that's unlikely because the Bureau's entered into a voluntary agreement to draw more water annually for fish in hopes of returning fish to Bull Run after 100 years. We don't support fast-tracking reservoir elimination plans. The EPA does require that we submit a plan by April 1st, but it does not require, it does not set a specific compliance deadline. And specifically, we don't support the plans that are outlined. In terms of Powell Butte and Kelly Butte and Bering Storage at Washington Park, the current proposal is a $403 million reservoir elimination plan. And in the end, we'll have 50 million gallons less storage. It involves reorienting our system away from the 100-year hub at Mount Tabor. It'll create new problems and new risks, all with no measurable public health benefit. In terms of Powell Butte, you heard Commissioner Leonard tell you on Friday the 13th that we don't need additional storage. So if Powell Butte is being built to replace Mount Tabor, you're going to move storage away from the service area, and that's going to create operational problems. If Powell Butte is being built in addition to Mount Tabor and Washington Park, then you're going to build a large tank, a 50 million gallon tank of storage that we don't need. And as the Water Bureau has said, then we're going to create stale water. So for $137 million, does this make sense to replace Mount Tabor storage at Powell Butte? As you know, we've recently spent close to $25 million at Mount Tabor installing new automated shutoff valves, new piping, and other projects. This year, we're going to be installing new security cameras and sensors. We've spent tens of millions at Washington Park installing new piping, new security measures, a grand staircase, replacing barbed wire with wrought iron fencing. It makes no sense to go down this this path, this compliance path. These projects have not been publicly vetted. I ask you not to approve this particular compliance plan. We need to thoroughly evaluate whether filtration makes more sense than UV or ozone. We need to look very specifically at these proposals for replacing Mount Tabor at Powell Butte or Washington Park. But our greatest effort and our greatest energy needs to go into securing the congressional relief. And we need to see that the city is out as supporting the delegation. Where are those talking points? Has the congressional delegation heard specifically from the Bureau, very specifically and enthusiastically, as to how it is that we are going to succeed in obtaining congressional relief?
So thank you. Your time is up. Did you have a final thought? All right. Well said.
Hi. Hi, my name is Stephanie Stewart, and I'm the Land Use Chair for Mount Tabor Neighborhood. I bring you a letter from Mount Tabor Neighborhood Board and the Association, as well as from the Southeast Uplift Livability Committee. Neither of the requirements forced on us by LT2 will add public health value to our water system. The day we break ground on LT2 projects, we've committed ourselves to writing a $40,000 check every day for the next 120 years to pay the construction and engineering costs. It is cheaper to pay the fines for non-compliance. Given the absence of health benefits, Water Bureau should offer an explanation as to why they are not considering the benefits of non-compliance. After a year of telling ratepayers that they will work diligently for legislative relief, Water Bureau has developed a compliance project schedule that launches now before legislative relief has a chance to rescue us. Water Bureau should put an equal number of man hours into each of these parallel tracks they are pursuing. And given that both tracks have the same public health outcome, the logical approach would be to put more man hours into pursuing the cheaper option of legislative relief. LT2 is flawed and has no business in Portland. I think Water Bureau should exercise a little more ingenuity. It's a matter of education. Educate the wholesalers and citizens as to how much more expensive their water will be. Clearly allay fears of health risk concerns, and my bet would be the response would be supportive of noncompliance in the short term. I'm asking you to save our organic water. I know it isn't technically correct to call it organic, but that's how I think of it. It is, after all, naturally filtered through the earth. An $800 million treatment plant will take some of the world's purest water from Bull Run and lace it with chemicals. Portland's Water Bureau has been safely serving up water from our open reservoirs for generations. They have exacting standards and clear protocols for dealing with the real, not perceived concerns of finished water that sits out in the open. Seagulls, dog toys, swimmers, you name it, they deal with it and maintain high-quality water. 5 years ago, the reservoir panel investigated all issues related to Portland's open reservoirs, including water quality and costs, and this exhaustive panel found no reason for eliminating them. Why would we spend another $700 million to switch away from this system that, in combination with our Bull Run sourced water, makes our city's water system sustainably and affordably pure? 20 years from now, when we wonder what happened to our water, some PSU graduate student's going to look back on this moment where you set off a chain of events in the name of LT2. Please give legislative relief a chance to work for us.
Thank you all very much. Appreciate your testimony. Carla?
The last two who signed up are Jeff Boley and Catherine Thomason.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the council.
Thank you. Jeff Boley. I'm president of the Arlington Heights Neighborhood Association. I'm also vice president of the Neighbors West Northwest Coalition. First, I'd like to say that we are, our neighborhood association is in support of taking all measures possible to try to avoid having to comply with LT2. What I'd like to speak to is what I think is a further strategy that could and should be pursued, and that is the opportunity to try to deal directly with our new president on this issue. Now, I thought the interview that he gave to Steve Croft on 60 Minutes was pretty instructive, where Steve Croft asked him how often he was making really important decisions, and he said it was just constant. And he's the one that makes the tough ones. I think that I don't have any doubt that if we could actually get the merits of the bad science that enabled LT2 in front of Barack Obama, that he would agree with us. The issue was, how do we do that? Because obviously he's got so much else on his plate. It seems to me that if our congressional delegation, I'm thinking particularly of our two senators and Congressman Blumenauer, were to ask for 5 minutes with him, with the very simple message that the city of Portland is about to be made to spend $1.6 billion on something that's actually going to degrade our system and make it less safe. It's based upon a Bush administration LT2 rule that was clearly based on either absent or bad science. And come at it from that angle, that this is just one more of these Bush administration unscientific decisions that was made that needs to be fixed. If you could simply ask the EPA to give us a chance to demonstrate why LT2 is flawed, I think would be an effective strategy to get him engaged, and I think that he clearly has the power to fix this problem.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Catherine Thomason. I am a physician, and I'm speaking on behalf of Physicians for Social Responsibility, the Oregon chapter. I have been part of this process since the policy the board that was held in 2005, and I really want to applaud the efforts of Commissioner Leonard and the Water Bureau for persisting with an administrative or legislative variance to this rule for the city of Portland. I'm sure that that's based in the understanding that Bull Run Water is without any significant risk in its current highly protected state, that it does not induce diarrheal illness due to cryptosporidium. In addition, with the newly undertaken security measures, the city has also markedly reduced the risk to malicious contamination of our open reservoirs. Obviously, continuing this route would save us nearly $800 million in projected costs. I will look forward to the upcoming legislative meeting next month regarding this issue and hope that the EPA, as it increases funding and starts basing its decisions on sound science, will be more open to the possibility of a variance for accepting increased monitoring rather than treatment and allowing well-secured open reservoirs. The purpose in testifying today is to recommend the need to postpone part of this report, in particular the decision that is listed here in terms of specifically using a filtration plant for treatment. I feel that there are less costly options that putting that planning into place and providing alternatives in that and instead of having that as part of the report would be the major thing I would amend with this report in signing it. And I also urge the council to join in with Randy Leonard in his outstanding efforts in continuing to pursue the variance options. Thank you.
Thank you. Could we have David Schaff and Dan Bates come back? So some of the issues that were raised, I wanted to hear your thoughts on, or Commissioner Leonard.
I just wonder if I could just articulate a couple things that I think, only because I've been, excuse the pun, immersed in this issue for so long, wanted to make clear everybody understood, because I'm not sure it's necessarily understood by everyone. You're hearing a couple distinct messages that I think that I want to make sure people listening to this understand the position I find myself in. You heard Scott Fernandez, for instance, say that one of the points that he wanted us to agree with is to stop the wasteful EPA variance process. You heard the last speaker say thank you, Randy, and join Randy in trying to pursue the variance. The division between those two positions is the sense that, as I understand it, those who at one point advocated we get a variance then realized with the amount of testing that we would have to do to qualify for the variance may in fact show, because of the volumes of water that we have to test, show some positive hits for cryptosporidium. And so that division of those that are against the rule think that we should drop doing the variance at all and just pursue a legislative strategy for an exemption. The place that I'm stuck in is that our legislative delegation has said to us, our help to you will come after you've exhausted your administrative appeals. So I want to make sure that the council understands there isn't unanimity in what you're hearing here today, even on that issue. The other part that I feel compelled to say something about is another point Scott made and others have made is contact the congressional delegation and ask for legislative relief. I sometimes think there's this perception that I'm the gatekeeper of contacting our congressional offices. And if you can just get Randy to agree to contact Wyden or Merkley or Blumenauer, all will be saved. Well,
we've been together in D.C. in their offices.
We've been together in their offices. I was nearly run out of the Capitol in former Senator Smith's office arguing this issue, literally. I mean, it was not a pleasant meeting that Sam and I were involved in. But I know you all have been contacting them, too, and if you haven't been, you should be. And if you are, you're hearing the same thing I am. I haven't yet to have a race of people from either the U.S. Senate or the U.S. House tripping over each other who wants to be the champion to get this variance. Why is that? I mean, I know what they're telling me. I don't know what they're telling you, but I know what they're telling me, and I've yet to find a politician who usually is looking for something to champion for the home district raise their hand and say, I want to be the one, Randy, that champions that for you. We have a meeting coming up April 17th. I finally had to say to, you know, our great government affairs lobbyists, I don't care what they're telling you. You tell them, I want them at the meeting. I'm tired of being perceived as the person that's deciding to or not to introduce an amendment to Congress. They're in Congress. They know what to do. It's their responsibility. I want somebody there to explain that to the residents. I'm tired of taking heat over something I have zero control over. So this is a very, very challenging issue on a number of levels, but you all have a responsibility too. You know, write your congressman, call them, email them. You know, when they come home, pigeonhole them. I'm not the gatekeeper to them. I'm doing just what you are, and we all have to work on this together. The sand filter versus UV treatment. I want to address that as well. We talked about this a little bit this morning, but I want the audience here to hear that. Originally, when I started working on this, I made a commitment that we would take an approach that was minimalist. That is, were we to have to comply with the rule, we would do so minimally. We would just comply with the rule because we all agree that there is no source of cryptosporidium in the Bull Run that we need to filter out. That we don't disagree on. So my approach originally was, okay, if we have to comply with that rule, let's spend the least amount of money, and what is that? And that is UV treatment. I even went so far as to go up to Seattle and visit the treatment plant up there, took a measuring ruler, measured it, went inside, had them show it to me, gave me some brochures, instructed the Water Bureau they were to have no contact with any consultants, deal directly with the manufacturers. If you want somebody to tell you how to design a UV treatment system, hire an engineer. There'll be no CH2M Hill lobbyists, no Montgomery Watson lobbyists. Hire an engineer. They did that. As we started preparing to take this minimalist approach, then I started getting feedback, Randy, you're going to poison the water. There's mercury in UV treatment. Why are you trying to poison us? That would be a horrible thing. And at one point, I realized, okay, that was probably not a good approach. Why even begin a process that could be construed to mean that for whatever reason, even though we were complying with the rule, we might put at risk the quality of our water? So I stopped. I said, okay, we'll go back to the 2002 set of recommendations that a citizen panel made, which was to filter the water, not use UV treatment. So we decided that sand filter made the most sense because of a couple reasons. One is that in the summer currently, when the reservoirs are being drawn down because of the amount of demand on them, we reach a certain level and we have to stop drawing down any further, even though there's water left in the reservoir, because it's muddy, it has leaves, it has sticks, and people don't like to drink that stuff. So when we get to that point, we turn off the reservoirs and we turn on the groundwater. Then we start getting complaints from people. We don't like the groundwater. Groundwater tastes different. Well, it is different. It's groundwater from Columbia Boulevard. By having a sand filter, we're actually able to draw down another 1 billion gallons of the reservoirs, and we can actually get some. I can actually stand in front of you and say, yes, it costs $385 million versus $150 million, but the $150 million provides no benefit, and some argue could potentially poison the water with mercury. You spend $385 million, you can draw down a billion more gallons, and it also filters out things that aren't being regulated yet. It is entirely possible that 5 years from now, a brand new Congress says, there's another virus that we're concerned about that UV doesn't kill, that only sand filter filters out. And by installing the sand filter, we protect ourselves and our children, our grandchildren in the future by having a system that has a spectrum broad enough to filter out a number of different potential viruses that could end up being regulated in the future. So for that reason, we agreed amongst ourselves with the Citizen Task Force recommendation to do filtration over UV. And lastly, I want to say I am the most least likely one up here to defend the Bush administration. But this statute passed under the Clinton administration, and the rule was directed to be drafted under the Clinton administration. So the Bush administration didn't pass the law. They didn't direct the rule to be written. It was done under the Clinton administration. And we're currently lobbying under the Obama administration to get some relief from the effects of this rule. And the results of that are yet to be seen.
So I have two questions for Dan, sort of picking up on that. One is, what is the likelihood of a new administration providing us with some sort of regulatory relief, the legislative aspect of that as well? And then I think that there's an underlying concern that if we if we adopt recommendations that show if we don't get the variance and if we don't get a legislative fix, that by sort of outlining as what then, what would happen then next, that it somehow hurts us on getting a variance or sort of legislative relief. And I wanted your thoughts on those 2.5 issues.
Let me, I could respond to the first and then like clarification on the question on the second, Mayor. Dan Bates, Director of Government Relations for the city. In terms of likelihood of success, as I've mentioned to anyone that I've dealt with this, I think it is a very high hurdle to be successful either within the administration or in Congress. To Commissioner Leonard's point, the EPA has two components to it at some level. One is staff and one is political. It is my understanding, and we're going to seek further clarification, that the staff at EPA, those that survive administration, agree with the premise of this rule. The second point is the political, which is where I think we've heard some of the folks today articulating that it is perhaps a change in administration could redirect the rules on this. The unfortunate news on that point is that we may not have the political staff in office for several more months. That is, the confirmation process is very slow, and those that are there will rely heavily on staff reports unless motivated otherwise. And so I think at that level, yes, you have heard a significant discussion coming in the administration about a science-based environmental policy. It will take time to fill that administration. And at this point, I think we have a staff, career staff at EPA that agrees with the premise of the rule. So I think the burden there is quite high, and we'll learn more as we continue to have those discussions.
So my point to clarify was, you know, recommendation number 3, quote, if the city is unable to secure alternatives, mm-hmm. close quote, we would move forward in the following fashion. And this is sort of a policy point. This isn't an ordinance. Does that somehow undermine our efforts, in your opinion, to get a variance or legislative relief?
I think it is a curve that with as more investment is actually put in place further down the line, it could undermine a legislative solution. At this point, I have not heard that verbatim, and my sense is that it folks view that as reasonable to pursue both options at this point, but that curve will change as we move closer to full compliance.
Can I pick up on that? A couple of questions for David. It's been a particularly thoughtful hearing with lots of thoughtful points of view, and I'm trying to digest a lot of information. So would you succinctly tell me what exactly are you asking us to do today? Because the mayor has just noted the difference between a policy document and an ordinance. So what exactly are you asking us to do today, and what will you be asking us to do tomorrow?
I'm asking you to accept the recommendation that we pursue the variance, that we pursue legislative relief, but we also pursue what we call traditional compliance. What I will be asking you in the future is that if we are unsuccessful at some point in the variance, if we are unsuccessful in the getting the legislative relief, that you will be supporting and budgeting the necessary resources for us to comply with the rule as it's written. From the standpoint of what I need immediately is I have to have an agreement. I have to have an agreed upon schedule with the EPA on dealing with the open reservoirs by April 1st of this year, so just about a week from now. That schedule, we can put a red light to absolutely everything if we do get legislative relief. We'll still have that reservoir that we will have built, and it will last us for the next 100 years, but we won't have to have moved on Kelly Butte. We won't have to have disconnected the reservoirs. We won't have to have built a treatment plant. We have some time. We don't have a ton of time.
Second question. We have not really focused today on the relative merits of ozone treatment, UV filtration, although you and Commissioner Leonard in other settings have talked about how you got to this mm-hmm. point. Does the council have more than one bite of the apple on that question, or does this policy document foreclose a further consideration of an alternative?
No, it does not. At some point, it will foreclose it because our proposed budget in the upcoming year, we are proposing to spend approximately $9 million next year designing a filtration plant. Now, you could tell us, well, don't spend that $9 million designing a filtration plant. Spend it designing a UV plant. But at some point, we actually have to design something.
I understand. But if the council, I want to be clear on what I would be asked to agree to and where there's some flexibility. If at some point in the near future the council wanted to revisit that question, if there was a will.
There is time.
There would be time to do that?
There is time.
And, I've been struck in this conversation that everybody seems to be enthusiastic, almost everybody has been supporting recommendations 1 and 2. And in fact, I think we're ready to put Randy's profile on Mount Rushmore on those 2 points. Where there seems to be significant disagreement, obviously, is point 3. And what resonates a little bit with me is that what I'm hearing you say is that we will aggressively pursue 1 and 2, which is the proposal to avoid this whole mess, that no one at Water Bureau disagrees with a number of the assumptions and positions of stakeholders about the unnecessariness of this, that the lack of risk around cryptosporidium, that the impact on ratepayers, things like that. But that it comes down to a question of federalism, that the federal government gets to tell us what to do on certain things. And while I'm prepared to see you do some jail time, because of your insulting behavior this morning on a simple request that I made on behalf of the Parks Bureau, which I've yet to see you withdraw and apologize for.
I apologize.
No, I think a little jail time would do you good, actually.
Yeah,
you know what?
I have to agree with you, Mr. Fish.
Sometimes we have to learn our lessons. No, but I kind of feel in a sense that we're having this argument, but we may be basically in agreement on some very fundamental points, but our argument is with something else. And it may be an argument over the Federalist Papers. It may be an argument over...
I appreciate you boiling this down to that because and I don't want to make David have to answer that question. That's one that I need to answer because you're exactly right. You've captured the elements of really the disagreement. It took you, what time is it, 4:05, 2 hours and 5 minutes to figure that out. It took me about 3 years and 1 month to figure out that was the real issue. And it wasn't until this past December that I finally got that. That the real issue was not, a particular treatment type. It was not a particular approach. It was really not to comply. That the issue really was, we don't want you to comply. And only until recently, when I read an email that articulated what the argument should be here today by some of the proponents, which is don't comply. The fines aren't that much. That I finally realized that that's what. That we're coming down to. You're talking to a person, you and I have talked about our family histories quite a bit. I'm very proud of my fourth great grandfather, Thomas White, who was a member of the Boston Tea Party through in Boston Harbor, boxes of tea in the harbor. We've celebrated that in our family for...
Just as I'm very proud of my son, who is a native Oregonian.
Yes. finally, you have some claim to this state.
That issue was raised.
Yeah,
my
exactly.
son, a native Oregonian.
Yeah, exactly. So, but even I will only go so far in challenging the status quo. That does not include allowing David Schaff to go to jail.
Well, can I build on that, yeah. Commissioner? Because I used to have to... My job... before I had the privilege of this service, was to advise people on how to deal with regulations and decisions that they disagreed with as a lawyer. And so everything I've heard rings true with me. We have a president. Well, we've now shifted it back an administration, but still I prefer to focus on the Bush, the 8 years of Bush, you know, and I cast a vote for another president to hopefully put an end to that madness. But, you know, we have an executive branch problem. Well, we can't solve that here. We have apparently a federal district court judge that we disagree with. Well, I'm familiar with that. You know, in the work that I used to do, our motto was justice prevailed and we're taking an appeal. You know, I'm used to being on the short end of the stick on that and understanding that, okay, I disagree, but it's not a viable option to disregard a court decision. I'm familiar with regulations which are poorly drafted or which are industry influenced. All of that rings true to me. I invite any of you interested in labor and employment law to, we can have an offline conversation in terms of the way those laws have been written in the last 8 years by industry groups that did not have the interests of the people we're regulating. I understand the frustration of seeking relief through other means, through going to a legislative body to get a fix. Congress does special bills on certain kinds of things, particularly around immigration law, but they're very difficult. The idea of bad science and us having to be hostage to bad science sounds to me a lot like we can go into lots of different areas of the law where I have been there. The ratepayer argument that we need to protect ratepayers and keep costs down, particularly in a recession, I mean, who can disagree with that? I mean, if we were all apparently seeking a variance and congressional intervention because we don't want this to happen, and nothing would make us happier than to see our water bills not go up the way they would. The argument that there's no health benefit, I mean, I drink the tap water. I've lived in Boston, Washington, New York, and now Portland. It's by far the best water. It's not just because Randy told me I had to say that. There's no question. The water that I used to drink in those other jurisdictions, you know, frequently smelled like a dead fish at certain times during the day. I mean, this water is pristine and is wonderful. So I could go on and on and on, and I get all that stuff. And it seems like we don't have a disagreement where we have an agreement. The question is to comply with a deadline where we have to put in some proposal. With that, with one or two exceptions in the room, it seems like we have general concurrence on recommendations, one, seek a variance, two, work through our congressional delegation to seek some positive law change, which would include an entreaty to the new administration. And three, my guess is on three, we might have some disagreements or some concerns, some based on policy and some based on not enough information to make an informed judgment. To be honest, that would be probably my case. So what I'm struggling with is we don't have a great alternative. And to say, well, we're just going to disregard this order or disregard something. I mean, I wish I had the luxury of doing that in my practice, but that's not really. We don't get to make that decision, and I don't think necessarily we're modeling good behavior when we say that. Sometimes we have to do what we're instructed. In the labor field, we call it obey now, grieve later. What we teach people, you know, suck it up and then file your grievance and then get recourse. So I'm struggling with the fact that it seems like the overwhelming majority of the recommendations has consensus in the room, but where we disagree is that what are the consequences of setting up a contingency, and is this contingency the right one? The consequences of a contingency, and respectfully, Dan, having worked on the Hill, I don't think you're going to get any points taken against you because you complied with the law. Actually, I think the reverse happens. I think if you engage in wanton civil disobedience because you pick and choose which laws you're going to follow, I don't think that sits well necessarily with your congressional leadership, frankly, at least in my experience. So then what it comes down to is if we have a gun to our head and we're supposed to do something, is ozone UV infiltration the better option? And the folks in this room have spent, you know, years and years and years studying that. And I don't feel like I'm today ready to render judgment on that conclusively. And that's why I asked David if there was some give on that point. But I just want to acknowledge that this is a classic, you know, caught between a rock and a hard place from what I'm hearing. And I'm struck by the fact that I may very well agree with most of what I've heard in this room and still be in a position of casting a vote that might disappoint a lot of people in this room. Precisely because of our requirement that I took an oath of office. I take very seriously the notion that we have to meet a deadline and at least have a contingency plan. So that's what I'm struggling with. And I That wasn't a question. That was a statement. So, Commissioner Fritz?
And thank you. That's a good summary of what we're up against. And I agree that the seeking the variance and the congressional relief should be our first option. And I agree with Commissioner Leonard that we need citizens' help in lobbying for that. We need a lot of help on that. As you've heard, it's not something that's going to be easy. So thank you for being there. So looking at the third point, then what do we do? And we have a deadline of a week today to have a plan approved or a plan submitted, David?
Approved.
So what's their turnaround? So when do you need to submit this?
I intend to submit it this afternoon.
And why did we not have this discussion a month ago?
Because we've been working on developing the response to the EPA when they rejected our initial proposal. So we have been working diligently on getting together the materials and the schedule that the EPA has indicated that we would need to do.
Was the report and recommendations of the 2002 Bull Run Treatment Panel accepted by council?
No.
Because I'm with Commissioner Fish wondering it sounds like I have no choice but to agree to do this, otherwise we will be out of compliance with federal law.
Not on the treatment side, Commissioner. The EPA will not dictate the treatment methodology. All they require is that by April 1, 2014, we have built an additional treatment plant that complies with the rule. So,
but by April 1, 2009...
We have to have a schedule for the open reservoirs. That's the deadline.
Okay, and we haven't really had much discussion this afternoon about the open reservoirs and what alternatives there might be. Are in-reservoir storage tanks at the Mount Tabor reservoirs viable options?
No, not like we could cover those reservoirs.
That's not what I asked. I said tanks in the reservoir so that they're not covered.
Well, that's
covering the water in the reservoirs.
That's actually what the plan was to build a tank within the footprint of the reservoirs. And
I'm suggesting you put the water back on top, not
that's exactly the plan that was forwarded that was opposed by the residents in 2004.
Well, that was 2004. So I suggest, since the recommendations of the Bull Run Treatment Panel suggested membrane filtration, and we haven't had a discussion since then, other than the covering of the reservoirs, which was covering the reservoirs, not leaving them open and putting the tank in.
No, that's that is exactly what the recommendation was, precisely.
Well, I thought I saw soccer fields on top of it.
There were no soccer fields. There was a water.
Oh, no, back to soccer.
No.
Okay. So in reservoir storage tanks are not a viable option?
No, they are a viable option. That actually is the proposal that we have for Washington Park, that we would build a tank within the footprint of reservoir number 3, the upper reservoir.
And why is that not being proposed for Mount Tabor?
Because I committed to them we wouldn't cover the reservoirs after all that happened in 2004.
What is the cost of in-water tanks versus excavating in Pelle Butte?
Kelly Butte. We've looked at both. They're going to be very comparable. The Tabor is a little more expensive in some ways because of the historic nature, but the reality is that the two of them are going to be fairly comparable, whether it's at Tabor or outside at Pelle Butte and Kelly Butte.
The treatment panel recommendation was to put the treatment facility at Pelle Butte, and your recommendation now is at Lusted Hill?
It was at Pelle Butte, but recognizing that there were some significant issues and that we should continue to look at the Lusted Hill site, which is what we're doing.
And where is Lusted Hill?
It is east of here. It's not far from the city of Sandy. It's out in the middle of nowhere, Commissioner, so it's really hard to point to. Near Roslyn Lake, if you're familiar with where Roslyn Lake was.
Okay. There was one part of the testimony that I didn't understand.
Okay.
In terms of San Diego's done a membrane filtration system, and you said that we need to treat 200 million gallons a day.
our capacity, our current capacity, is just over 200 million gallons a day. So if we would build a treatment plant, we need to build it so that it's big enough to deal with our peak flow, which is, in the last couple of years, 180 million gallons. So we need to have the capacity to treat 200 million gallons a day.
And we currently have storage capacity for 170 million gallons in the reservoirs.
Right, but that's just in-town storage. I mean, that has nothing to do with how much we use in a day.
The total tank capacity under the proposal is 85 million gallons. So how are we going to be able to manage with that much less storage?
Well, we're only looking at 50 million gallons less storage. Right now, one of our reservoirs we don't even use. We use only half of reservoir 6 at any one time right now. So the water is always flowing in, but it's always flowing out. So that's not going to be an issue for us, Commissioner.
Okay. Troubled by accepting the report with the recommend that seems to have really specifics for when what we're going to do. It doesn't have specifics on how we're going to pay for it. And I'm echoing Commissioner Fish's question: when do we get to discuss this? Exactly what we're going to do?
Well, you'll be discussing it in budgets every year for the next several years. Your first discussion we've already had in the Budget Committee for our upcoming budget, and that is for Phase 1, which is the Powell Butte project that we talked about this morning, and then the design of a treatment plant. That's an approximately $9 million capital investment upcoming in this proposed budget.
We don't take citizen testimony during those budget work sessions. We do at budget hearings, but it seems to me that there's so many other budget questions that are being handled then that making a decision as big as this on a difference of $200 million and then the 18% interest increase that's being requested this year includes some of the Powell Butte costs, but it doesn't include the cost for filtration, right?
Yes, it does.
It does?
Yes, it does.
So the 18% increases over the next 5 years pay for the entire $400 million system?
Yes, it does. And there will be there will be a separate rate hearing that will be coming in front of you outside of the budget process as well. So there will be a number of opportunities to have that discussion and to have citizen input into it.
But as the gentleman with the industrial laundry said, that is part of this decision of the 18%
rate
correct. Increase. So we need to have more publicity to the citizens at large to let them know that this is their opportunity to weigh in on the kind of treatment that if we have to do it, that's why, when they have to weigh in.
And just so you know, on the issue of treatment, whether it's UV or filtration, the first year costs will be the same. And so we are projecting a 17.9% increase no matter what level of treatment we select. If we do end up ultimately deciding to build a UV plant instead of a filtration plant, the lower rate increases will occur in 10, 11, and 11, 12, and beyond.
Thank you.
And why is that?
Because we're spending next year, we're not building anything, we're designing it. And so the design costs of the UV plant are going to be the same as the design costs for the filtration plant.
You're done. I have a few questions.
I'm done.
The $403.4 million cost estimate, is that because you haven't done the design? I assume that's a low confidence.
Relatively, yes. We did say this morning that the confidence level on the first phase, the excavation, is high. But that's just the first phase of a fairly big project, yes.
And then you just mentioned in passing in your conversation with Commissioner Fish a $9 million number. Did I mishear you? You need to spend $9 million on planning or something?
That's what we have in our proposed budget for this upcoming year for the design of a treatment plant, yes.
Okay, and then the second line on number 3 that I quoted earlier, it says if the city is unable to secure alternatives, how do we know or how do we judge? I know it's a hard question to answer, but how do we know when we've failed.
I think I would defer to Dan on that.
In terms of knowing when we will have construed, been through all of our options, it is very hard to tell. As someone alluded to earlier, this can take multiple sessions, this type of legislation. And sometimes it can happen very quickly. So I don't have a good answer for when we would know that we have no further to go.
Okay. Other questions?
Yeah, I just want to clarify on the budget since we now are looking at the rates. The information we have from the Portland Utility Review Board says that the LC2 costs are currently estimated at $300 million. Is that so in the rate request?
Not for next year's budget, no.
The total cost,
depending on the treatment methodology, would be approximately $800 million, which includes the open reservoirs and a filtration plant.
And what is your projected payment? How much would the rates go up for how long to pay for that?
We've projected rate increases through the next 5 years. And they would be approximately double if you build a filtration plant, and they're approximately 6% less each year if you build a UV plant.
But it's not paid for after 5 years, or is it?
Yes. It would be. We'll still have out year expenditures because on the open reservoirs, we won't be done in 2020, and we are projecting the cost of that to be $403 million. So there will be rate increases out beyond the 5-year projection we've made so far.
All right. Any other council discussions or inquiries? All right. Then let's move to a vote. Carla, could you please call the roll?
Fritz. Well, water is the most basic service that the city provides to the community, not only to our 95 neighborhoods, but to several outlying jurisdictions that we provide our delicious and wonderful and pristine Bull Run water to. And it's wonderful to see everybody here today caring about our water supply, and I'm so impressed with not only the staff work and Commissioner Leonard's diligence in seeking the government relations in seeking the alternatives with Congress, and also in getting right down into the nitty-gritty of the science and coming to us to give us your advice, and I really appreciate that. And I think, as I mentioned, we all need to lobby harder to try to get this legislative alternative because the question of do we filter in order to have more capacity for water is, to me, really different from do we pay $200 million for a system that we don't need in UV versus $400 million for a system that we really don't need for crypto splitter AMDM either. I think we need to revisit the study and have more citizen involvement in discussing what kind of treatment do we want in 2009 versus 2003, 2004. We're in this most serious economic challenge that most of us have experienced in our lifetime, and the cost does matter. And so we do need to come back and look at what can we afford? We might want the Cadillac system, but what can we afford? And that has to be part of the equation, especially now. Having said that, we have to comply with the Environmental Protection Agency. We have to, you know, as an elected official, I promise to obey the law. And it's the letter of the law and the spirit of the law. And so we do have to have a plan in by next week. I am very troubled that I have no choice but to vote yes, because we have to have a plan in by next week. And I would have liked to have had this discussion at least a month ago so that we might have been able to amend the report or put in some other promises for a full public process to have that further discussion. As we move forward on this, we have to broaden the community involvement because it's not just the neighborhood associations that are closest to the reservoirs that care about this. It is citizens citywide, and 8% rate increases, looking at the backlog of the other maintenance that we have to do in our aging infrastructure system, that's a lot of money. And it's a lot of money for citizens right now with so many people out of work. And so I would like to know, and I know that you're having the meeting on April 11th. I encourage everybody to come, meet with the congressional delegation staff, and continue to work on that point. And I believe we also need to have more discussion about the various treatment options, so that we may not like our choices, but at least that we're given all of our choices and that the whole city engages in making that decision. Reluctantly on the timing issue, but with great respect for what Commissioner Leonard has done on this project, I vote aye.
Fish?
Well, I had a chance earlier in the my statements to ventilate what I was thinking and my concerns. I'm struck by two things. One is something that Regna Merritt said earlier, which is